Good morning, everyone. This is Jeffy Kennedy, author of Epic Fantasy Romance. I'm here with my first cup of coffee. Ah, delicious. Today is, you all say it with me, it is Friday, woohoo, October 20th. Lovely, crisp October morning here in Santa Fe. Happy to be here with all of you. I have to tell you all that I think Killian is keeping track of time. I was having this argument with Mary Robinette Kowal about whether or not animals can keep track of time. Because some of you know, I have a graduate degree in neurophysiology, and we did a whole lot of stuff with, I worked in neuroethology, which was processing of sensory information. And animal behavior was a big part of it. And I was a TA for an animal behavior class for a couple of semesters. And one of the things that sort of, at least then, I have not kept up on the field. Oh, hang on. Killian was hung up. So one of the things that I remember being sort of salient difference between humans and animals, because there's not a tremendous difference in a lot of ways. You know, a lot of animals use tools. You know, they don't have a vocal language, certainly not a written language like we do, but they do have communication. But one of the things that we talked about being very different about humans is our ability to plan, to anticipate the future. Animals certainly remember the past, but how much they are able to keep track of the future is in question, or the passage of time. And Mary Robinette was talking about how they know what time it is because of like feeding time and so forth. And I said, yeah, that's different though. That's a diurnal rhythm. They certainly understand seasonal rhythms, but do they understand 5 days from now, which is what she was trying to teach her cat. And if you haven't followed, oh, I'm going to sneeze. If you haven't followed, Mary Robinette has these buttons that her cat and now her dog are using to talk, where, you know, like the button says outside, you know, and they press the button up, they want to go outside. And it's very interesting, the video she posts, you know, and how much cognitive thinking is behind it. How much of it is a conversation? How much is reading in? Which is always a question when you're working with animal behavior, right? How much are you projecting your human ideas into it? So she was trying to teach her cat the concept of, because her cat understands later and maybe understands tomorrow, but she was trying to teach Elsie like 5 days from now, tomorrow and tomorrow, you know, like pressing the button five times. And I said, I don't think she's going to understand that. And Mary Robinette said, well, she can now. So this, and then I started talking about animal behavior, that sort of thing. So like, how far ahead can an animal understand that something will occur? Well, this morning, Killian was super keyed up. And he was sticking to me like glue and talking to me. And I think he knew that it was podcast day and that he was going to get to come out in the secret garden with me. And I was trying to figure out if I gave different cues than usual, indicating that it was somehow Friday. And I'm not sure, because yesterday we had to go down to Albuquerque. David's participating in an experimental trial for a new Parkinson's treatment. So we went down there, and so I got up and put on makeup, which I don't unless I'm doing a podcast or going somewhere. And then I wrote for a couple of hours before we went. So I don't know. He could be picking up on subconscious cues from me that it is podcast day. Or is he counting time? But the thing is I don't know, because like from Monday to Friday is a different span of time than Friday to Monday, right? And certainly we have a different pattern on the weekends. So I could get him knowing that Monday morning is podcast day. But does he really know that today is podcast day? Except he really did kind of act like it. So, anyway, that's our cats in New Mexico weather portion of the podcast. I do have other things to talk about today. It's been a good week. I got 3,000 words on Monday. I didn't do that well again the rest of the week, but I've had a very good writing week so far. And I stand to have a really good day today. I mean, yesterday was kind of messed up, and so was Wednesday for different reasons. But I'm at almost 60,000 words on this book, so I'm feeling really good about that. Almost 60. I think I'll pass 60 today. We'll see. I'm at 58,312. And I'm standing to have, I think it's going to be the best week, best word count week again since July. I think I'll surpass last week. I'm feeling pretty good. And the book seems to be in a good place. So that's great. On Onira, the announcement for Publishers Weekly today. So maybe next week we'll have the official announcement and you can have all of the details. We were having kind of a lot of fun yesterday because we were going back and forth between me, my new editor, my editor's kind of assistant editor, I think that's her title, and my agent. The four of us were sort of sending emails around coming up with a new title. Coming up with titles is interesting. I was kind of hoping they'd let me stick with Onira, but I knew that it was unlikely. She wants a longer title than that. And she gave us the sort of the model of the title that she's looking for, which I think is a good call. I think that it would be the correct transmission of genre, which is partly what you want to do with titles. And so I think I don't want to tell you what model of title that we're going for, but I think it's right. So anyway, we're trying to come up with, like, why does that title work? And I was, you know, sort of working off of that template. And then you start playing the synonym game, right? You start coming up with looking in the synonym finder. I ask some of my writer friends, you know, and people start brainstorming ideas, you know, like, how about these sets of words? And it's fun. And in some ways, titles are like lightning. You hit on good ones by accident. But I don't mind changing titles. Like, a couple of my writer friends are like, you shouldn't have to change it. It should be Onira. And it's like, yeah, but I can see why. First of all, one-word titles tend to be bad for SEO, search engine optimization. And also, they don't tell the reader a whole lot. And I thought, you know, like with Onira, you've got one shot at getting it right, and it's spelled weird. It's O-N-E-I-R-A. And half the people, not half, but a lot of times people write it wrong. They write O-N-I-E-R-A. My agent does that sometimes. And I noticed that, like, when people were brainstorming titles, sometimes they had it like Oneria, O-N-E-R-I-A. So, I mean, that's just a human thing to do, right? And it's a Greek word, right? So it's like doesn't come naturally to our American English speaking typing, our fingers that are trained. So if you have readers saying, oh, I heard about this book and it's called Onira and I want to read it, you know, the odds of them typing that into Google and getting the right book, who knows? But if it's a longer title with more words, the algorithm will fill it in a lot better. So The only time I minded, no, there's been a couple of times that I've minded changing the title. The Mark of the Tala was originally called The Middle Princess, and I liked that title. That series was going to be The Middle Princess, The Flower Princess, and The Sword Princess. And I thought those were really good titles. I still do. And my publisher didn't like those because they thought it was too YA, which I don't know, maybe so, but everybody thought those books were YA anyway. So, and same thing with the Chronicles of Desneria books. The first book was originally not called Prisoner of the Crown. And what was it called? Let's see. So I have my themes. It was originally called Princess of Desneria, which she also thought that sounded too YA. I guess the word princess. The only other one, and clearly I wasn't too attached to that one, is I didn't remember it. And it's kind of a meh title looking back on it. I just wish they'd given those books better covers. And, oh well. And then the only other book that I really minded changing the title, and again it was, well, it was for a couple of different reasons. The Orchid Throne. My working title was The Slave King and the Flower Queen. And I thought that was a really good title. And you could see I'm still trying to get that flower thing in there, right? I have my themes. But they didn't want to put slave in the title of a book. And they felt like that would be insensitive. And I don't want to be insensitive. So I was like, okay, fine. And we ended up with The Orchid Throne because it was better for search engine optimization. And it's fine. The title's fine. I'm not sure it's really transmits the genre as well as it could have, but there we are. So anyway, coming up with titles, it's an interesting thing. And when I ask people about it, it's funny because I have one friend who's very good at coming up with titles. And then a couple others who are like, well, I'll try, I'll think about it, but I'm not good at this. My agent always says she's not good at it. So yeah, that's been fun. So yeah, hopefully good announcement soon. Although it'll probably be sans title, so we can get that announcement out there. Unless we really decide on the title today. I know that they wanted to get like the publicity and marketing people involved on that title too, which is fine with me. Which is, you know, part of why it's great to go with a traditional publisher, because you get all those people working on the team. Let's see. So other things that I wanted to tell you about. I was thinking about something yesterday, especially with writing Twisted Magic, which I am now up to 5 POV characters. What has happened to me, people? At least 5. I've only had 4 so far, but I keep thinking, I haven't done Gabriel's point of view, and I think I will at some point. So yeah, 5 points of view. But largely alternating between Jadron and Selly, right? Those of you who are reading that series, you know what I'm talking about. And I was thinking about the standard advice, and it's advice I give myself, so I think that it's... I think it's decent advice. But sometimes people wonder, if you have multiple points of view, what point of view to write the scene in. And the common wisdom is that you write it in the point of view of the character that has the most at stake in any given scene, which is a good rule of thumb. And there are times when I have thought, oh, I should change the point of view of this scene because really this other person has much more at stake. It's really about them. But I was writing a scene the other day, actually yesterday, let me be clear, it was yesterday. And I was thinking about that advice and thinking about, I wonder if this should be in the other character's point of view. But this book, Twisted Magic, in many ways is a lot more about Jadron's journey, and a lot more of it has been in his point of view for that reason. And Selly is obviously there, but she has less to learn at this point. You know, Selly's kind of got her shit together at this point. But I wanted to have more of her point of view because I didn't want to like have it be totally unbalanced, right? So I had switched to her point of view, and I was thinking, gosh, you know, I wonder if this scene really, he has more stake in what's going on. And then I thought about how I actually don't worry about this excessively. I I'm an intuitive writer, so I tend to choose these things intuitively. But also I realized that the way I write really very often, I froze there for a moment. Really very often, all of my characters have a stake in what's going on, right? And someone was explaining to me not long ago that I write very complex characters. It's always interesting when someone else explains your work back to you, that I write complex characters and that they don't have simple goals and motivations, which was an aha moment for me because I have a really hard time with like that whole goal motivation conflict structure, you know, where people ask you, you know, what is your character's goal? What's their motivation and what's their conflict? And I've always had a hard time with it. And it's because my characters never have single or simple, any of those things, goals, motivations, or conflicts. And I love it that all of my characters have a stake in everything that's going on. So I think that's an interesting way to think about it. Very often in teaching writing, we distill information down to simple concepts because it's easier to teach and it's easier for newbie students to grasp. But I think we have to remember that as you become more expert, as you dig into the art of writing, of storytelling, that those simple concepts may no longer apply anymore. And I think a lot of you are expert authors out there because you send me messages and stuff. And so I know you're listening. I think it's really important for us to remember that. It's, you know, easy to get sucked into the vast conversation that is directed at principals, at newbie writers. But we also have to remember that we have passed beyond that. There's one more thing I want to talk about. But I think giving ourselves credit for writing in more complex ways and having more experience. I remember complaining a while back about some kind of piece of advice that I didn't think was good. And my friend said, well, you do know they're not talking to you, right? And I was like, oh, I didn't know that. but it's good for me to remember. And I think it's good for all of us to remember. And then I just want to finish, not to finish on a sour note, but I got a request for a blurb the other day, and it sounded very generic. And I asked my assistant, I'm like, didn't this person ask me for one before? And she looked and found out that yes, they had about 6 months ago for a different book. And they use so much of the same language in this clearly blanket request. And I just wanted to share it with you because for those of you who are like doing this kind of thing, don't do it this way. So this is how it started out. It says, Dear Miss Kennedy, I love your special brand of romantic fantasy. Your books have so much of what I love and so much in common with my own writing. My new dark fantasy would be a great fit for fans of your books who are searching for their next read. So do you all hear how generic that is? I mean, it sounds like a spam email, doesn't it? And I know that they're probably earnest in trying to do this, but they don't tell me which book it is. They don't say anything more specific about my book than that. That would fit anybody who is writing in this subgenre, right? And like when we get the spam emails, one of the ways you can tell it's spam or phishing is because they don't use specifics. It's almost like a step up from Dear Occupant, but not much. So the email that they sent me 6 months ago said, "Dear Miss Kennedy, I love your special brand of fantasy. Your books have so much of what I love and so much in common with my own writing. Your books are dark and sexy and provide a fresh intake on fantasy staples. Intricate world building and weaving together high fantasy and compelling love stories are things I am constantly exploring in my own novels. My new release would be a great fit for fans of your books who are searching for their next classic series to devour." So basically, they reworded the same pitch. And I asked my assistant that before we'd said no, I was just too busy. And I said, "Well, did they reply to that email?" And she checks and said no. So I said, it's the spaghetti approach. And she, who is Dutch, came back and said, "Because spaghetti has a lot of sauce and it's messy and gets all over the place." And I said, "No, it's the throwing spaghetti against the wall and seeing what sticks." And it's not an effective approach. I realize that asking people to read and blurb your books is difficult, but using this generic approach where it's really clear that, I mean, I don't know if this person's ever even read my books. Because you could know all of those things about my books without having read them or caring about them. And yeah, if you don't care about my books, why should I care about yours? Food for thought. I hope you all have a fabulous weekend. I plan to. And I will talk to you all on Monday. You all take care. Bye-bye.